I am Plata on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Marie Clemens joins me again, the writer and director of the musical documentary The Road Forward, joins me now to talk about the film, which will have a run at the Van City Theatre starting the 14th of July. The film had its debut at Doxa and was a hit, and now as the film is released wider, I'll talk to Marie about this production and the style in which she brings many voices, important stories, and remarkable talents to life in this film. The movie brings to life the beginnings of Indian nationalism in the 1930s through to today, and the First Nations activism that's important in our discourse. In the film, there are interviews with key members from organizations like the Native Brotherhood and Native Sisterhood, as well as highlighting the important work done by the Native Voice newspaper. And throughout the film, there are beautifully shot musical sequences performed by some of the country's most talented singers, musicians, and spoken word artists. I'll get Marie to tell us about some of the highlights of this unique and necessary film. Marie Clemens is an award-winning writer, director, and producer of film, television, radio, new media, and theater. Her website is at marieclemens.ca. The website for tickets is at viff.org, and the National Film Board site has a number of pages featuring clips and more information on this film. Marie Clemens was first on this program in 2015 when the stage production of The Road Forward premiered at the Push Festival. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Marie Clemens. Ms. Clemens, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So we talked when The Road Forward was a stage production, and I think I remembered at the time you said this was the second or third sort of iteration of it, because it started in 2010 as part of the Cultural Olympiad.
Yeah, and that's correct.
It was about 10 minutes, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And then it sort of morphed into something longer, and now a film.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, when was it decided that it would be a film?
Well, when we did the premiere of The Road Forward, the live performance version at Push in 2015, Shirley Vercruzzi from the NFB came to see it. And then we started a conversation on, you know, starting to develop a documentary, a music documentary based on it.
Yeah, and it's one of those things when you see the film, you realize what a great medium that is to tell these stories, to tell the history, and not only talk about these important people from the past, but showcase these remarkably talented people from today. I mean, you have performers, musicians, and songwriters, and actors, and the medium of film lends itself very well to the telling of this, doesn't it?
Yeah, I felt it, you know, it might not always seem the case, but there was something really inspired to look at. The Native Voice was a newspaper that kind of became the root of The Road Forward, so it seemed right that we also bring in musicians and vocalists who are bringing their voice to what's happening today, kind of marry the both of them together.
So you mentioned the Native Voice paper, and I guess there's a new book on it. Eric Jameson has just published one, sort of history of that paper. Was that started here in Vancouver?
Yeah, it's just a few blocks from here. I believe it started out of Maisie Hurley and Tom Hurley's apartment in the West End, and then they moved it into Tom Hurley's law office just a couple blocks here on West Hastings.
And so Tom Hurley later on became Tom Berger's law partner, is that right?
I don't think they were partners, but Thomas Berger, when he was starting out, had his first law office just a few doors down from Tom Hurley's.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, they were friends, and he got entangled that way.
Yeah, I guess she was Maisie Hurley was such a dominant person, wasn't she?
Yeah, I mean, she was so great to discover, because her personality, you're right, it was so feisty and intelligent and passionate.
Yeah, and so she coerced Berger, after her husband died, to take on some of these cases, and they eventually... Berger, of course, his reputation precedes him. He has represented many cases, seminal cases in Canadian jurisprudence, right? The Calder case later on in the 70s?
Absolutely. So I think that meeting, you know, changed the course of his career and you know, his life's work.
Yeah, there's a headline, because you marvelously bring us this paper that we should know about. that that we don't. But I mean, this is a wonderful way to get to know this very important newspaper. You have clippings of it that you show throughout the film, and there was one that stood out for me. I guess it was the headline for an article: "White Man's World, a Cold Place." And I kept thinking about that throughout the film, because it makes one realize just how, I mean, we're talking about Canada in glowing terms at the moment, because we're celebrating the 150th anniversary of Confederation, but there are some very dark and cold places in our history, aren't there?
Absolutely, and I think, you know, we're still also, you know, dealing with some very dark and cold, mm-hmm. cold issues presently, so... ongoing.
Yeah. The music, because there's a lot of great music in this film. How did it all come together? It was a very collaborative process, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been working, you know, with the ensemble of musicians and performers and vocalists for, you know, quite a long time now. And you know, layering in activists of that time and activists, you know, through the decades up So it's very, very layered and very inspiring to work with them.
Yeah, are there many elements of storytelling that you utilize in the film? There's the what one would call up the documentary that I guess we're most familiar with. There are music videos, which I think are very effective in showing, in many cases, the emotional turmoil that a lot of people face at various times of history. And then and the sort of recreations that you do, and I'm thinking of where you're interviewing activists who are still alive, and then you have behind them actors depicting them. I mean, how did that work in terms of filming? I mean, when you film someone, say, on the train, talking to them about, you know, the constitutional... what was it called? The Constitutional...
Constitution Express.
Yeah, when you're talking to them who are part of it, and then they're seeing their younger selves depicted by actors walking in on the train as they're sitting there, I mean, what was that like for them to see?
Well, I think there was, obviously for me it was the idea that our history is still alive and that it can be called upon. Mm-hmm. And definitely when we, you know, invite these activists in, it certainly... activates in us what that must have felt like, what that must have, you know, looked like, what they were facing at that time. So I think, you know, I think when people, you know, they sign on to, they agree graciously to be a part of a documentary or a film, and they're asked to come in, you know, sometimes you can't see the whole picture because you're in for a day or a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there was something really magic about us having a premiere here at Doxa and being able to witness it together. So I think, you know, perhaps at that time, you know, that's when everything came together for them and they understood, you know, the whole picture.
Yeah, because I see some of the looks on their faces as these younger actors, these performers that you have in the film, these musicians, sort of portray them or portray what they went through. And there's a look of surprise maybe is not the right word, but just almost delight at seeing, you know, seeing the past and the present in one set like that.
Well, there's something about recognition, you know, not only of yourself, you know, from long ago, but how that it's affecting people. And I think when we, you know, see these performers embody that, there certainly is a heightened reality and a heightened idea of the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's such grace in that, for sure.
Now, you mentioned the screenings at Doxa. A lot of the folks that were in the film, were they able to attend and see their participation in the film and see the film itself?
Yeah, we had a huge gathering of performers at the screening, and a lot of the documentary subjects were there. And of course, you know, a lot of Vancouver came up to see it, or that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
It was really, really exciting to be in the room with all those people.
Yeah, the Vogue was full that night, apparently, right?
Yeah, I think there was like over 1,200 people, and it was a little bit like a rock show documentary screening.
Yeah.
Who would have thought, eh?
Yeah. Well, what was the reaction from people who were in the film when they saw themselves on the big screen like that?
Well, I mean, even the ensemble members who had been with the piece for quite a while and it's lived in them for a long time, They hadn't seen themselves in the film or heard, you know, who next to them was saying what.
Yeah.
So I think there was something, you know, it's a very personal film in the sense that people are revealing their ideas and life experience. So I think they were very moved, not just because of their single voice, but that it added to kind of this collective voice that was telling a story that we, you know, felt was really important.
And it's a film that ought to be seen on the big screen, right?
Yeah, I was just talking, you know, to someone about it, and I know that we watch films all the time on our laptops,
yeah,
and it's convenient, but there is something about that experience of being, you know, being in a room with hundreds of people in the dark and being towered by, you know, these images and by this music.
I was huddled over my laptop watching the film, and with the music and the drumming and the, I mean, it must be something. I mean, I was thinking to myself that this is something that one needs to experience in a theater, and people will shortly do that at the Van City in July.
Absolutely. I mean, they have such a beautiful venue there, and it is something when you hear, you know, hear all the details of the sound and the music and see the screen and see the, you know, the beautiful 4K projection. There's something grand about it.
Yeah, there are places in Metro Vancouver that we recognize because you shot this throughout the city and just outside of the city. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Yeah. You found some wonderful places, like there's some houses, I guess, that look like they did 50, 60 years ago, right?
Yeah. I mean, we have these... You know, the city's always, it seems right now that the city's changing so fast,
right,
but it's kind of brilliant to find these places and, you know, recognize them from, you know, a time, you know, decades earlier.
Yeah. When you talk to the activists of today and about their role in the discourse, their role in society today, and they look to these people from the past for inspiration, has activism changed that much? Have they told you it's changed all that much in the age of the internet and social media?
I was just talking about this the other day, but I think what we appreciate in hindsight, obviously because we have our phones and we have our Facebooks and Twitters and
yeah,
all the things that are so immediate or we feel immediate is, and there was something, you know, always sticks with me around Doreen Manuel's saying, you know, that her father, George Manuel, he wanted to sit next, you know, eye to eye with someone and be in the room with and have that personal experience. So I think, you know, even though it might seem old school, there seems to be something undeniable about that connection that we can have with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, so often now we have immediate needs and we can, you know, we can shut off all our devices and nothing's expected of us. But it's pretty hard to say no to people when you're in the same room with them and you know you're witnessing what mm-hmm. what they're telling you.
There's some you mentioned Manuel, such powerful. There's a powerful recreation of his speeches, and the sort. But I mean, you have video of him in the from the past.
Yes.
So, such an important figure that unfortunately a lot of people have forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, to me, you know, starting to get to know him through
yeah.
this film and through history, I certainly, you know, don't feel shy about saying, you know, when I heard, you know, this speech and some of his other speeches, it was like hearing Martin Luther King, you know?
Yeah.
It was like really having to sit down and just be, you know, just be affected by the purity, not just the purity, but his vision and his idea of the world, which I think, you know, he was such a man of grace that you had to stop and listen.
Yeah, and so I don't know when the film was from, where the film's from. I guess it's from the 70s or the 80s. I guess during the 80s, during the Constitution.
Yeah, around 81, 82.
Yeah. Very timely still, isn't it, his words? Very powerful words and necessary today.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these earlier activists, you know, they certainly paid their dues, and they also, you know, paved a way for us to continue to fight for, you know, just human rights and native rights and environmental rights and social rights, which, you know, of course, still needs to be done.
The young man that recreates George Manuel's speech, he's a spoken word artist, a musician.
Yeah, Ronnie Dean Harris or Oz 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says something very powerful near the end of the film. He says, well, the problems of 50 years ago or the problems of the past are still the problems of today. And so as you've made this film and you're bringing it to a wider audience now, how do we solve some of these problems of the past and which are obviously problems of today?
Well, I think, you know, I guess that's one of the questions that we leave with, you know, why haven't they been solved so far?
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it, you know, obviously is that we don't recognize that we share a history, and a humanity, and I think, it's really hard to, I guess, get to equality if one part of that relationship doesn't, I guess, appreciate our past. So I, you know, I can't pretend that I know the answers to solve our problems, but certainly it's coming. And I think, you know, with the activists coming from every which way, whether it be artists or politicians or teachers or lawyers or doctors, we kind of feel this sense of momentum building.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that it's a short momentum; it's a long momentum out of a long tradition of activism.
And it's our history, regardless if one is native or not. It's all of our history, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my belief. I mean, you know, we sit in a unique position in the world. Our history is you know, not like any other in the world. And we've been in relationship for a very long time, so I think there's something that, you know, there's something to be said about that, and there's some, you know, there's a lot of things we can do better, and I guess that's what we're working towards.
Marie, in the film, you have a number of artists and activists who obviously pay tribute to the folks from the past who have inspired them, and they talk in the film so poignantly about their place in and their heritage, how important it was for them to find themselves and to find out who their ancestors were, and because for a lot of people it took some time to I guess reclaim their past, that they were too busy, I guess, growing up or growing older, that in adulthood they went back to their roots.
Well, you know, we have a long history of residential school, 150
yeah.
years. You know, we have a long history of foster care. We have a long history of scooping, and all these things. You know, it's very hard to get to your own history, your blood history, if it's been denied to you at a very mm-hmm. young age. So, you know, I think that people are seeking their own personal reconciliation, you know, with their family's history and how they're placed in that history. And how that, you know, how that history has affected them, and how they've survived. You know, I think these things are very active, and as you could, you know, witness in the Road Forward, has profound effect on people.
Yeah. And when they talk about the future, because I think as much as this film is about history, it's very much, as was the title suggests, it's about the Road Forward. Do you all look at, because you mentioned a moment ago the activism that you're seeing, and it's really, the momentum is there, that great change can happen very shortly. Do you wonder about how you folks today, the activists of today, how your part in history will be seen years from now, say?
To be honest, I don't personally, I think I seem to be caught up too much in the present. I seem to be caught up in trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's the, you know, the plight of all of us when we live in a certain time. We're very, you know, concentrated on our families and what we can achieve and how we can create change in a, you know, in a real way. And maybe as we get older, you know, it's only then that we, you know, reflect back and go, oh, okay, you know.
Yeah, I guess there's great urgency, isn't there, that we look to the very, I guess, immediate future rather than, say, you know, one's place in history, I suppose.
Yeah, I think we're, you know, I think we're still very much caught up in what can we do now,
yeah,
and how can this change now? And, you know, part of that impatience comes from, you know, decades of having patience. And the other is just that I think there's a lot of us that can see a different future, and that is happening right now.
Yeah. Do you, as this film is about to open here in Vancouver, and I'm assuming elsewhere throughout the country, are you? Do you have someone in mind that really needs to see this film?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't really thought of it. I mean, what I am enjoying about it, and I don't even know if that's the right word, but what I'm appreciating about it is that people that are Native and non-Native are seeing it.
Yeah.
And that it's affecting, you know, affecting people, and it's creating a dialogue that, you know, I hope is, you know, exactly what anybody wants when they create film or a piece of art.
It's a marvelous achievement. I as I said, I huddled over my laptop watching it. I was quite moved by it all, and you're to be commended for it. And I hope a lot of people come out to see it here in Vancouver, especially.
Oh, me too. Hometown. So.
Yeah. Congratulations, Marie. It's nice talking again.
Great. Thank you so much.
The film is called The Road Forward. VIFF.org is the website for tickets and information. The run begins the 14th of July here in Vancouver. Marie Clements joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.